you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome back. Another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Jay Dyer back on the show. Of course, Jay is a writer, lecturer, researcher, and author of Esoteric Hollywood and Esoteric Hollywood 2. His website, of course, is Jay's Analysis. He returns to discuss, he did a couple talks recently on this NATO document about hacking the human brain, neurowarfare, and also he also gave a talk on sort of end-of-the-world catastrophism. In media, and I guess as a meme, have we seen in the past? Well, I don't know, at least 40, 50 years, at least I recall. Mm-hmm. Jay, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thanks. Glad to be back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you for coming back on. So, this NATO document, this is really interesting. I thought NATO was there to keep the Russians out and Germany down, but they're apparently involved in a lot of other things, right?
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to expire a long time ago, but it's still around. And I mean, hasn't NATO been involved in human trafficking and, I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff? So, I mean, it looks to me like it's a criminal enterprise.
Well, all this is national security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a...
Right, just like Jeffrey Epstein, national security, sure.
Can't question it. He belongs to intelligence, Costa said when he was questioned about the case. Don't question it. Epstein belongs to intelligence.
Yeah, that's a magic wand. You just wave that over anything, right? And you can't look into it or can't question it.
So this NATO thing, what's going on? They want to, control the human brain? That's the new battlefield, apparently? What?
Right, so this is an interesting document that is kind of recently out there, cognitive warfare, and it's describing, I don't know if you are familiar with the Michael Aquino document, Mind War to Psy War, mm-hmm. which I think was early 90s or somewhere in there. And I read that many years ago, and this reminds me of that, and then it's kind of like the next phase of that, because that document was kind of setting the army's doctrine of psychological warfare moving it forward out of just psyops and into mind war, in the sense of not just changing people's attitudes or perceptions and this kind of stuff, but actually using electronic warfare and the latest means that were available, ELF and VLF stuff, to target the actual human biology. He even gets into things like ELF, VLF waves. He gets into atmospheric engineering and spraying, bioengineering, geoengineering. All of that is included in that old document. And this is like part two of that. It's like the next level above that, where now they're kind of bringing to the fore a lot of the tech elements and how technology be involved in psychological warfare in a way that we've never seen before. So there's a lot going on in it. There's a lot of different topics, but in terms of the overview, it's just in it's in a long train of documents like the famous, I think it was another Army War College document. Mine Has No Firewall is a good one in this category. Mind War to Psy War, Aquino. And let's not forget, Michael Aquino was the founder of the Temple of Set. So he was a famous, well-known hardcore Satanist. He had at one point been a member of the kind of Anton LaVey outer portico kind of goofy satanic groups, and split off to found his own group that was a lot more serious. And what do you know, he happens to be involved in high level UFO let's see, I'm trying to remember all, but he was involved in studying MK Ultra for the Army. He was involved in UFO research, and then he was involved in Spacecom. So again, this is a person who's not, you know, he might look clownish. I think he recently passed away, but you know, this is a person who was very serious. And this document here, as I said, falls in line with that, as well as Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. These are all very similar kinds of documents. But yeah, it just basically lays out a new platform for psychological warfare. And the platform is you. There's statements that are similar to one of the documents I haven't gotten to yet, which is the recent UK Ministry of Defense document done in consultation with the German government, called Human Augmentation, the Dawn of a New Paradigm. And the first chapter of that document talks about how human beings are going to be viewed as basically walking biological platforms, meaning like Facebook is a platform or YouTube is a platform. You're now a human platform. And the more that I go, the more I'm starting to think that, you know, with the stabbies and all of this, they really view it like we are intended to be basically just walking routers. And they just want humans to kind of be emitters and receivers of the signals that they send. And then, I mean, on all levels. So basically, whatever the latest, you know, PC position is, that's just downloaded into you via the web, the signals, whatever, and you just emit that. And so they really view humans not just as batteries, not just as cattle, but emitters and receivers of the system's message. And then you become a feedback loop. Whatever they put out into the net then is fed into you, and then you feed it back into the system, kind of like the feedback loop that's mentioned in Aaron and Melissa's Minds of Men documentary. So that's what we're talking about here. That's what the document's talking about. It talks about this document of cognitive warfare being a part of full spectrum dominance. I'm sure probably many people in your audience have read F. William Engdahl's book, Full Spectrum Dominance. That's a Pentagon term that they coined, I think from Rumsfeld a few decades ago. The idea is total control. And so the new domain that's been forged in this document is to hack the human being at all levels. So not just his mind in terms of thought processes, but the actual brain chemistry, because as we'll see, the document goes on into talking about implanting nanotech, basically chipping the population. So how to hack the individual is the key point here. And then it goes into examples of cognitive warfare. It talks about making everyone a weapon, and then also everyone potentially being a weapon. The battlefield of the 21st century is the human brain. Humans are the contested domain, and the future conflicts will likely occur amongst people digitally first and then physically thereafter, in proximity to the hubs of political and economic power. So they want to be able to put whatever they want into the grid. You accept it and you just basically repeat it. And then more or less what happens is that anyone that doesn't do this is literally, I'm not joking, considered an enemy combatant. So they say that you don't even know it, but you've probably been infected by the enemy's propaganda. And the document says, we might say China, we might say Russia, but basically anybody, right? So if you doubt the narrative, it's because you've been infected by enemy propaganda. It's very Orwellian. It reminds me of the way, I know this is kind of cliche, but the way that Winston and O'Brien interact, you know, the way that if you doubt Big Brother, it's because you've been listening to some foreign asset or foreign agent, and of course that's all baloney anyway. So I mean, I can keep going, but if you want to interject here, that it's basically just saying, first important point is that it says that cognitive warfare does have the intention to intentionally harm society and not military enemies.
Yeah, so they intentionally harm society.
Right.
When society is supposedly, at least the civilian world, supposed to control the military.
Mm-hmm.
So who's in control here? I mean, it's...
You're right.
And also, if you have the ability to control the human mind and manipulate public perceptions of things, you have no effective oversight or democratic control over these institutions, which have gone completely opaque, if not black, you know, in the name of national security, and there's no effective restraint or control, then you ponder, well, there's no oversight or control, then you have people of I guess, the character of the Satanist Michael Aquino, mm-hmm. devising psychological warfare strategy. It's not what most people think when they think of the military or their government, at least Americans. They think that, you know, mm-hmm. how do you have elections and, you know, supposedly constitutions that the government follows? Of course, we know they don't. But I'm saying, you read a document or you become aware of a document like this, and you're like, mm-hmm. well, wait a second. This isn't what NATO was designed to do originally. Maybe it was, but I'm saying as far as it was retailed to the public, you know, this temporary alliance to deal with a specific threat. Now it's, you know, it's like the whole world, you know, so it is,
One thing I'd noticed a while back, and I'd mentioned, for example, when I did the analysis of the Annie Jacobson History of DARPA book, was that she makes the point that really Vietnam was kind of a test bed for rolling out a lot of the technologies that mm-hmm. would be turned on the domestic population in the technocracy. And that's another thing that was mentioned in the Silent Weapons Required Wars document, is that very early on in the document, it says that we learned during the period of wartime, both World War I, II, and Cold War, all of these different strategies that worked in terms of the admin. I think it even mentions the admin. It says that those OSS and, you know, admin techniques were then turned on the domestic population, right? That's what... the Silent Weapons documents declares that this war was declared on the public in 1954 from these Harvard elites and these different Bilderberg type people. So you get the implementation of that type of a thing in the NATO document. So basically just another one of these kind of bookmarks in a long, it's almost like all of these white papers are chapters in a long book of how to just take over the world, basically. So this chapter just happens to be later on in the book when, you know, we're getting towards the third act, and they're kind of, it's all coming out of the closet publicly, you know, in your face. It's hard to deny. I just got Klaus's new book, by the way, his Stakeholder Capitalism book, so I'm looking forward to reading that. I'm sure it's going to be full of juicy nuggets, but I can already kind of guess what it's going to say and what it's going to be, given, you know, having read his other stuff. So
Klaus Schwab is a good individual to focus on, because look at him, he's sort of an embodiment of this representation of this power structure, because
he's one of the kind of public sort of figureheads of it.
But he holds no official government position. And that this is the governance issue.
Yeah, but he's a former steering committee of Bilderberg, so that's above governments. supra-governmental position.
Well, he's the Davos man, you know, and we just recently had this with this environmental summit, of course every year we have the World Economic Forum, and people have kind of become a nerd to it. Just maybe it's not reported that this private gathering, or these environmental summits where politicians meet with business leaders to decide the future of humanity, or how the new economy is going to be designed. And there's no public input or debate in the various parliaments, legislatures of the world. It's almost like it's accepted as, we're just going to accept this. And this is, I was reading this about this NATO document, how it talks about how the cooperation between governmental bodies and corporations.
Yeah.
So it's a public-private partnership.
Yeah.
Great.
Right. So yeah. Mussolini, but not Mussolini. Right?
Yeah. <It's>, yeah.
If you just say that it's liberal, right, then it's not, then it's good. It's like socialism, which is okay. But
yes.
When you, if you say fascism, no, it's not fascism because, you know, we're pro gay. We have a rainbow flag. So you see, it's not.
Yeah.
But it's, they're just different operating systems, which work the best. And I think one of these documents, which I don't, I've been reading some of these white papers, I get confused. One of them even just talks about the fact that it's not about right and wrong. It's about winning. And so really, oh, it's the, I went back to the Miles Copeland Game of Nations book because I was looking at when he was talking about the CIA game center and that it, the game center was the basis for Report from Iron Mountain, which was supposed to be satire, but was actually based on a real thing. And that, that had sort of come out of, you know, different corporate meetings that were, you know, they really wanted this Cold War to happen. I think ultimately to kind of put the infrastructure in place to have, you know, the more or less what would be the technocracy set up. So, anyway, we're late in the game is what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
When we go through these different chapters and these different white papers, but, the document goes on to talk about things that are very Orwellian, like I said, like complete control of the mind. The final domain is the inner domain of the human mind and not just the external biosphere or anything like that. The all-encompassing militarization of society is reflected in the tone of NATO. The Gray Zone author writes in his summary of the book or of the document, he says, that they might roll out the typical things like, oh, there's Russian sleeper agents and Russian agents are taking over. And you know, we've already heard this, by the way, you know, with the whole Trump election. That was all foisted upon everybody as a Russian, you know, intelligence operation. All of that fell apart many times over. And even more recently, yet again, has fallen apart. And yet, you know, the whole, you know, four years of this, right, and that all fell apart. They've admitted the Steele dossier is all fake, but people still believe because it, you know, it did its job basically, right? It's just, it was all about perception. It had nothing to do with what was true or false.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the same way with this document because it goes on to point out the Gray Zone author. What was his name? I forget his name, but he points out that the NATO PSYOPs document was utilized. The principles in it were utilized by the Canadian government to push the whole fear PSYOP lockdown. And I went, it was the mainstream media had reported this about a month ago that the Canadian government used PSYOPs basically to get all of Canada on board with the COVID nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the document they were using. This is what they were doing. So in other words, it was this document strategies that utilized neoliberal ideology within NATO to via the public-private partnerships offer cash prizes, including, you know, donuts and all these kinds of things if you get the stabbies and if you do what you're told and if you go along with the lockdowns. Right? I mean, all of that was out of this document's strategies.
It was like lottery tickets in West Virginia. Yeah, hamburgers in New York, was it Illinois, Six Flags tickets or something?
Well, that's what I was going to say is like, okay, so that means it wasn't just the Canadian government that was using this model. Uncle Sam too.
Yeah. Yeah. Various incentives. And then was it de Blasio, soon to be ex-mayor of New York said, well, we tried to do it voluntarily. Now we're going to have to force people. It's like, it's like, what is it about voluntary? Don't you understand? I mean, it's like, yeah. Obviously, it was never intended to be voluntary.
Right. Ottawa's, the author notes, the Ottawa's press release stated, cognitive warfare positions the mind as a battle space and contested domain. Its objective is to sow dissonance, instigate conflicting narratives, polarize the opinions, and radicalize various groups. This is cognitive warfare. It can motivate people to act in ways that can disrupt or fragment a cohesive society. So they are literally saying we wanted to sow dissension, chaos, hatred, division, and that plays into the lockdowns. I mean, they're just literally saying, yeah, we psyoped everybody into the lockdown.
Yeah, and then they can game the reaction to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they obviously the dissipate, there's going to be a reaction in opposition to it.
Well, yeah. And this is another point that vindicates everybody's analysis about the masks, because the document there, it says cognitive warfare seeks, this is the definition, cognitive warfare seeks to change the way not only that people think, but how they act. Canadian government wrote in its official statement, attacks against the cognitive domain involve integration of cyber disinfo, misinfo, and psychological and social engineering capabilities. So in other words, the PSYOP was entrainment, getting you to, the mask was getting you to go along. That's it. To the whole thing. Because if you're wearing the mask, then you're de facto believing the rest of the narrative and you're going to get the stabbies.
Yeah, and they pretty much admitted that. I mean, even the public spokesperson, you know, people, the Surgeon General, Fauci, you know, they went back and forth on it.
At one point, he's like, if it helps other people feel good, go along. Just do it for other people to go along. It was something like that. He said something like that.
Then he admitted saying that he didn't want people to use too many of them, so he lied about their efficacy, you know, one way or the other. Like, well, then why should we trust you? If you're being political with science, then we obviously can't trust the science, because obviously, you know, this is a PR game. It's not science.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. At the very least, you're admitting that you're not being forthright or honest. And, you know, then you supposedly have these scientists and technocrats who are all objective and logical and not. They're just shills.
Exactly. They're like high level salesmen, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is why you have the whole, you know, COVID nonsense or whole PSYOP. You have, who's the spokesperson for the response or the expert that CNN's interviewing every day? It's Bill Gates, who's a college dropout, you know?
Yeah. A guy who does virus stuff on computers. Yeah. But, I mean, I've always thought that was weird.
Yeah, and the shots themselves, they resemble like an update, right? Like a periodic update you need on your operating system because of viruses.
Well, I mean, wasn't this John C. Lilly's point? Was that the programming and metaprogramming in the human biocomputer? So, yeah, we're walking routers and platforms for these people.
And then you have, of course, Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, saying that those who are skeptical about mandatory jabs and the whole, you know, are
all criminals. No, yeah. So one thing you notice is that they do a lot of projection, right? So basically, like, they know they're criminals, and then they just will say you're a criminal.
Well, yeah, like I said, his company's paid out more than $2 billion in criminal fines the past couple of decades. So it's like, wait a second.
Yeah, right. No, I don't think most people in the skeptical conspiracy crowd probably have never come anywhere close to any kind of crimes like that.
Yeah, I've never laced baby powder with asbestos, but Johnson & Johnson has. So,
I don't have a criminal record, but you're calling me a criminal when you literally have a criminal record. I mean, this is not going to work.
But that's, again, it's just part of the, I don't know if it's part of humiliation or just PSYOP or, you know, gaslighting you on these things.
Well, I was noticed, remember too, a lot of these people are narcissistic psychopaths, and I don't mean to get too psychobabbly, but the last few days I've been researching kind of famous con men.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice the patterns of well-known cons, you'll see a lot of these kinds of patterns in those people. Like, they will typically constantly double down. So one of the weaknesses of those kinds of people is that they can never admit they ever made a mistake at all, even a tiny mistake, because they see themselves right in a irrational way. Like they're these, you know, superhumans. Think about, you know, the Patrick Bateman character in, you know, American Psycho. You know, his delusion of who he thinks he is just completely divorced from reality. But that's the operating system in his mind, is that he views himself in that superhuman way. And they see themselves as these, you know, fantastical geniuses. You know, they claim to be the inventors and creators of things that are just impossible. You know, and they lie all the time. Like, they sort of compulsively lie. So you'll notice in a lot of the big con men, the same patterns of how they are with a lot of these people pushing this kind of stuff. They're just sort of like con men at a higher level, basically.
Yeah, and I think the political system, what's that just book? Political Punerology, where the psychology is sort of a psychopathic ruling managerial class. And that's what we have, obviously at the federal level. But that and just incompetence, sort of, we have a senile president and who's literally just there. It's like, it's almost like the,
it's symbolic. It's an interesting symbol, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it's gotten to the point where, Trump served in many ways, maybe represented something that they didn't like, but he did serve their interests, whether it's manipulated or intended. But then Biden serves sort of the latter stage American empire and its humiliations phase. Yeah. Same with the vice president. It's like
the decline phase. Yeah.
Well, we have all these octogenarians that are like Nancy Pelosi and Biden. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you really think they're making any decisions? No, of course they're not. I mean,
no, they're just, they're on pills all day and half out of it, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you get like the Cuomo character or Gavin Newsom, who never want to admit they're wrong. Even though Cuomo, is, what, might go to jail now for sexual harassment,
I think I remember too, like, I don't remember where I heard this, but some book somewhere, some lecture, but somebody had said, one of the CIA policies was to lie at all times, even if the truth might have served them, the policy was to lie because that was seen as a better way to just basically constantly have confusion.
Yeah, and you can do that. I mean, obviously, if you if you're set up, if the World Economic Forum can coordinate, with the World Health Organization and the various national governments and many state governments and media, they have focal points, and that's what that whole Event 201 thing was about, how they war game or taped up exercises. They have all their people in place to kind of control the narrative, control the major media coverage of this thing, and you can create a false reality. If you have the resources to control the media, you can create you can put on a pageant, a movie.
Exactly. Right.
Well,
even within the Event 201, there's all the fake newscast clips.
Yes.
Which is very instructive for how the real news is actually fake news.
Which he got now with the fake reports of hospitals being overwhelmed or the use of file footage, same file footage being used for supposed different hospitals.
The war zones, which was all made up.
CNN, like you've mentioned it. CNN was caught faking missile attacks 30 years ago? Almost 30 years ago.
They've done quite a few doozies. Don't ever forget the one of the guy who's supposed to be on this bow of a Navy ship.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. That one's a funny one too. And it's obviously so they really, I don't know that. We've talked about that for a long time, but the NATO document, just to get back to that, it goes on to mention, there's a whole section on ways to harm the brain. So again, it's not just a matter of combating ideologies or info war. It's actually the document even notes going beyond info war into chem war or bio war. And so, notes that, cognitive warfare is the hottest topic for NATO at this point. That is the battle for the brain. It goes on to point out that it's no longer info war. It is in fact, actually, changing of the human brain chemistry itself. Cognitive warfare is also a kind of hybrid warfare that begins with hyperconnectivity. This is then the domain of the internet. Everybody has a cell phone. It starts with information because information is the fuel of cognitive warfare. However, it goes way beyond just information because that is a standalone operation or info warfare. This is the next level beyond that. This is about leveraging big data to produce data everywhere we go, every minute, every second. This is extremely easy to leverage. So now we see why, big tech plays a role in this. NATO researchers claim that foreign adversaries are the suppressed aggressors employing cognitive warfare. So in other words, they're doing the whole trick of, well, we got to do it because the enemies are doing it. But at the same time, it's made clear that Western Military Alliance is developing its own tactics, cognitive warfare is defined as the art of using technologies to alter the cognition of the human targets, so changing the brain patterns. Those technologies are now incorporating the fields of NBIC, which is nanotechnology, biotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science, hence NBIC. All these together make up a very dangerous cocktail that can further manipulate the brain. Thus, altering the very brain itself is the best way to alter the thought processes. So, I mean, again, you can just imagine what all this might mean, right? The chemicals, nanotech, signals. I mean, it's really, you know, the types of things that we've been talking about forever on here.
It's interesting you mentioned that the pretext or the justification is that our enemy, not defined, is doing this too. And that was the, if I recall, the original justification for MKUltra was
exactly.
The claim that
we had a North, because the Soviets do it. Yeah,
yeah. During the Korean War, they thought some prisoners of war were mind manipulated. And of course, we see that in the Manchurian Candidate, the movie, it's portrayed. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that old justification is, well, they're doing it, so we have to get ahead. Same thing is also justified for chemical or biowarfare research, right? Which, again, might cast some light on the, you know, the never-ending pandemic. You know. Justification.
Absolutely. When you see this stuff in the white papers, like, it's so obvious what's going on. I mean, it's just, this is clearly a giant psychological operation to really just break down, atomize, and freak the public out so that they will submit. I mean, it's just so obvious that that's what all of it is. And it's one in many phases of this. And I had recently also gone back. Let's see. I did SPARS, and I did CLADEX, and I did I went through the whole Rockefeller lockstep document. I read all that, and then read CyberPolygon. And when you do that, you can begin to see how they will run these kind of in tandem. They'll run them in they all kind of relate or can be related together if they need to. So, for example, CLADEX. That actually was based on the anthrax attacks, which I think everybody knows is one of the false flags and as part of the 9/11 event, right? The anthrax attacks were actually known to be from a government lab. That wasn't inside job. That was, you know, part of the 9/11 event. And so what they had done, though, is that there was a drill that was run by under Bush back then that was the model for the CLADEX exercise in 2015 or 16.
Is this dark winter back in 2001?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And then that is one of the models that is, along with Event 201, Crimson Contagion, CLADEX, SPARS, Lockstep. When you know all of those, you can see how all of those basically built up to what happened last year and now.
Yeah, and again, you could say, well, this is just prudent planning, contingency planning.
No, it's not prudent planning when SPARS document has literal rappers on Twitter rapping about the events a year before ahead of time, right?
Like, yeah, and SPARS foresees, at least imagines, a reaction to the vaccine, right?
Yes, SPARS. Well, there's multiple things. So SPARS has the same death numbers that the New York Times reports, which shows that the death numbers are just made up. SPARS has the hashtags that are used on Twitter by the rappers. And, of course, we saw Run DMC put out a ridiculous, you know, get the vaccine rap song. using even the people on Twitter were using the actual hashtags in the SPARS document. We see that the SPARS document foresaw the public reaction. And so people who were kind of the public face getting burned. This could be government officials, CDC officials. And what that is, what that's there to do is to protect, you know, people like Gates or Klaus, you know, people in the background that are never going to get in trouble.
Yeah. And again, you have this use of the entertainment complex, you know, and of course we saw
mentioned like Remdesivir. There's a variation of that mentioned in the SPARS document. It's called something else. I mean, there's just all these things that are obviously not coincidences.
Yeah, and so this, you can see how, again, if you just look at, you know, all the actors involved in this, all the parties involved in it, and you can pretty much draw a schematic of the conspiracy. If there was a governmental body that was actually sovereign and wanted to investigate this as a crime, they could easily make the case of a massive, you know, fraud, global fraud.
No, it's all the people that we've known. Yeah. It's all the people that quickly talked about. It's the exact same. It's the Bilderberg, CFR, Trilateral, you know, World Bank, IMF, Bank for National Settlements. It's that power structure that's doing all this. And they're doing it in the open.
Well, like just recently, there's this talk about net zero economy and all, you know, BlackRock and, is involved in this, and they're coordinating with the World Health Organization and Bill Gates Foundation. And they're just presuming that they have the authority to redesign, restructure the whole global economy and change everyone's lifestyles and shut down, coal use and use of fossil fuels. And this is done through investment strategies or investment patterns or what they invest in. And so the whole green economy is imposed without any legislation being passed or debated, because they can, they're set up through all these crises have enabled them to amass so many resources, $1 trillion in assets, which they can direct for social, governmental, political change, which they talk about. It's ESG, environmental, social values, and governance. And so then we're confronted with the realities. Well, wait a second. Why is, Larry Fink or whoever controls Vanguard, which, by the way, the ownership is private, like the Federal Reserve, apparently. Yeah, why are they determining how we live?
I know a lot of people make connections between that and that crew of the elite, which I don't have any doubt about that. I just haven't looked into it. But then I've got friends that were going pretty deep into the Evergrande thing, and I don't exactly know what's going on with all that, but I have no doubt that it's just basically what just buying up all the whenever the economy gets bad, what the elites do is what they call it, a fire sale. Remember they did this when the IMF basically tanked the European countries. The I think Steve Forbes, like, didn't he go in and like buy up all these Greek islands or something that were like, civic monuments, and now they're all they're all privately owned. So basically they just auction the country off when the economy collapses. So I assume that that's what's going on with whatever's going on with BlackRock and all that. But it's an issue that I didn't get a lot of time to look into that. But is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what this COP26 conference is, where all these bankers are getting together, talk about, the green economy and how all these I think they call it what's the term they use for it? It's national assets, NAC, what is it? It's called the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. And so this is, Janet Yellen was there, Mark Carney, John Kerry. The strategy is to, under the pretext of creating a sustainable green economy, is to sort of gain control of all these assets. And it's called Net Zero Asset Management Initiative.
And that's, you're saying that's what the BlackRock thing was all about? Okay.
Yes. They actually created what they call national asset corporations. And so they're going to, this is why you have things like, what's happening like with the ranchers out west. This is land seizures. You can also,
is this basically tying into why Bill Gates is the biggest landowner?
He owns a quarter. Of course, none of them's focusing on his own owner of 250,000 acres of land, farmland in the United States, right? Might that be a problem from a governmental, economic, social standpoint? Of course, he's able to amass. He's leveraging his wealth that has increased immeasurably because of the lockdown, the pandemic response, which he helped spearhead and implement. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has pointed out, I think in his book about Fauci. I don't know if it's in the book or he gave a talk, but he's saying, just talking about the sheer number of the trillions of dollars assets that have been transferred just in the past 20 months. So it's a huge wealth transfer.
Yeah, in the middle of COVID, it was obvious that this was a big wealth transfer, basically. Yeah.
And the destruction of small businesses, which then is, again, all part of controlling things, because just culturally, politically, small independent businesses are a potential point of resistance to the whole global homo agenda that we're seeing.
Well, this is actually what the silent weapons document says. What you just said is that.
Again, another coincidence, I guess, that we're seeing here.
Well,
I guess sometimes
there's the documents that are kind of like, we don't exactly know their pedigree, and they're just kind of in the air. And, oh, you know, there's,
yeah,
it's rumored that this was leaked by this person or it was found in this place. And I think that for many years we could say something like, the day tapes could maybe be in that category,
yeah,
or the silent weapons document. But I think over time, it's pretty obvious that these were real documents. I mean, the day tapes have been totally confirmed. The silent weapons documents, obviously real to me, seems authentic.
But it's dedicated, basically every, it talks about destroying things like the traditional family, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, again, that's exactly what's in the Berylson Jaffe memo.
Yes.
So absolutely.
And so you can draw the conclusion when you have governmental white papers or meetings that either sponsored by the government, like the Population Council, Planned Parenthood, right, or these NGOs, right, supposedly private, but they're not really. They talk about implementing these things to erode family, create, yes, sexual confusion. But then we see the broad cultural agenda preceding a legislative and judicial agenda. You might think that there might be some coordination here.
Well, I think that's I mean, it's obvious, but that's the hardest thing for people to grasp.
Yeah.
Is that, well, now, wait a minute. If the CIA was doing this and saying the same things that the Rockefeller Population Council Dr. Day meetings were saying, and if they're saying the same things that the, you know, silent weapons document is saying, and that's saying the same stuff that Bilderberg was saying at the time, and that's all saying the same stuff that, you know, Klaus and all his crew are saying, you know, 50 years later, then, I mean, you know, how much evidence do we need before we realize that, you know, this is obviously a plan? I mean, and not even those. I mean, you can go into countless other documents, Changing Images of Man. You can go to Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, you know, Bill Joy's famous essay. So, you know, there's just no lack of evidence of these topics when you start investigating it. But, you know, I was trying to think of the right word, and it came to me eventually. The Aquino document is from Psy War to Mind War. And the NATO document is from mind war to brain war. So it's going from changing thought to changing brain. And it goes on to discuss I don't know how explicitly they are when they talk about, it's not an action against what we think. This is an action against the way that we think, the way we process information, and how humans turn information into knowledge. So that sounds pretty ominous and dystopian there. And to me, that suggested, I was looking into that video, I'm sure you've seen it, where, you know, it purports to be a Pentagon lecture of a guy, you know, discussing different stabbies and how they can target different areas of the brain and shut off the areas of the brain that relate to religious phenomena and experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this video?
Yeah, someone said it was Bill Gates, but it really wasn't.
Well, that's obviously not Bill Gates. That's, yeah. But however, even if you can go now and you look up AP and the different fact checkers, they won't say whether the video is real or fake. So the verdict, even to the normies, is out on whether they act. I would say, to me, it looks real. I think it's an authentic clip of a lecture that was given. And it's not like we need that as proof, because, I mean, Jonas Salk was already saying the stuff that's in that video decades before that. Although, you know, you could argue that in Jonas Salk's day, maybe they hadn't yet developed, you know, the stabby that could actually target parts of the brain. But I would venture to say that they have. And my suspicion, my intuition would be that that is probably a real clip of a lecture. But again, even if it isn't, I mean, this NATO document is basically saying that type of a thing. They're literally wanting to change how humans process information as an element of mind control. And they go on to note, well, who is this? You know, who are you talking about here? And they point out, oh, well, potentially anyone. And they even say, do you have a cell phone? Then you are a potential enemy combatant, because you may have been infected with the enemy's psyops without even knowing it. It's like this Spanish Inquisition. Right?
Well, the funny thing is, then how do we know that they're not infected by it?
Exactly, right. don't try to use logic, though. Right?
Yeah, it's like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Use some disembodied angel or something.
it's like the Monty Python skit, right, where it's like, well, you can't know what you are guilty of, but you're guilty. Like,
yeah.
Just trust us. We know you're infected with the enemy's mind virus, but we can't tell you what it is.
Yeah, it's you're talking about, you know, ideas that these organizations always, they always claim we got to do this because of the environment, we got to do this because of resource scarcity, and this goes back to the limits to growth. You know, the Club of Rome, which was a Rockefeller operation. I think they met at his mansion in Italy or something. That's where it was. But the whole justification for that, from what I understand, was based on a computer program. And so here we go back to these algorithms and computer programs, same way that the whole pandemic was based on an algorithm out of the Imperial College of London, which was completely bogus, you know. And same with the Club of Rome, they anticipated the resource use and all. It was all based on a bogus computer program that pretty much spewed out, you know, garbage in, garbage out. It spewed out the results they wanted.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. These computer models are just fake. They make up the computer models to justify the agenda.
Yeah,
and that's what they do. That's what they mean. They did that with COVID and all this stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, guy Ferguson out of London, which again, if you just follow the money, ties back to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Same with Johns Hopkins, and basically their tentacles, and this goes back to the whole. I mean, like the early days of the Rockefeller Foundation and how they, you know, got involved in education with the General Education Board. They took over medicine. You know, you had their the Reese Committee investigation in the 1950s, exposed how they took over the American Historical Association to change the interpretation, to gradually sort of this change academia. And it's interesting because in your talk you mentioned the Gaither Report. It's Roland Gaither. And, of course, he was head of the Ford Foundation during that time. And the Gaither Report, again, is almost like NSC 68 or some of these other documents where it calls – basically it rings the alarm bell for emergency to justify all this government spending and military, you know, and intelligence development, and, you know, create the cryptocracy that now we're confronted with, you know.
Yeah, there's a good section in the Wim Hof book where he talks about that as well, where he talks about how they had faked these different reports about Stalin.
Yeah.
And that this really got the Cold War. Oh, we got to do all this because Stalin's going to nuke us. And a lot of that was just really exaggerated.
Yeah, Stalin was more interested in consolidating his control, in the Soviet Union. That's one of the reasons why he had his fight with Trotsky and eventually had him murdered. But, of course, then the Trotskyites became the harsh, you know, the neoconservatives, anti-communist, you know, whatever works, right? They're very pragmatic.
Well, and that's the ideology of the RAND Corporation. So if you want to understand mutually assured destruction and basically terrorism, I mean, that's the RAND Corporation are the architects of the modern war on terror, because they're neo-Trotskyite terrorists. I mean, they basically combine Strauss, Leo Strauss, with Trotsky. So that's the world we live in.
Basically, so it's noble lies confronted with constant terror.
Yes, scare the crap out of the public nonstop.
Well, that was the old Cold War.
Now the new war on terror is the CUFID, the invisible enemy that's everywhere.
Yeah, the whole dawn of the Cold War, it was Senator Vandenberg who told Harry Truman to scare the hell out of the American people.
Yes, exactly.
To justify it all. And that's you had Korea. It was a Dean Acheson who said Korea saved us because it created the fear, the emergency that justified – it created the justification for NATO and also a lot of the big budgets, because prior to that, there was a lot of resistance in Congress, particularly from the Republican Party, about at that time it was Truman's Cold War agenda. Then they brought on Bill Buckley and the whole National Review crowd to sort of corral the right.
Yeah, to steer the conservatives into libertarianism. Yeah.
And so, of course, then Bill Buckley, CIA, right? I mean, and that gets the whole Congress of Culture of Freedom, and the publication of supposed independent magazines to sort of control the narrative. Mm-hmm. They create feminism, and also at the same time they promote pornography.
Yeah, Playboy.
Yeah. It's the same way they promote the mask wearing and also anticipating the resistance to it, which create the conflict.
Yeah, well, fast forward then to color revolutions and NATO putting rainbow flags in all their embassies everywhere. Mm-hmm. And BLM flags too, by the way.
Yeah, that's flies above the American flag right now.
Right. Rainbow flags, BLM flags, American flags in the embassies and stuff. So
the whole global, yeah, that's the big thing. You heard about the U.S. Navy commissioning a ship named after Harvey Milk?
I did hear that. And, my poor dad, who, is, proud of his Navy career and all that. And then it's just, I feel bad for these boomers that have to kind of sit and look at, what they devoted their lives to really just being transformed overnight, And it's, they just kind of like don't know what to say. So
it's like, I think the Navy's motto a few years ago was a force for global good, which is problematic in and of itself, whatever. But now it's a force for global homo, right?
Yeah, it was I remember that campaign where it was like, we're not just the Navy for the United States, we're the Navy for the world or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. We need 13 aircraft carriers because, they can drop off food some every once in a while somewhere. So I don't know. But
So the NATO document goes on to talk about the implementation of what they call neuroscientific methods, technologies, which is shorthand as NeuroST. The usage of this will include integration of human-machine interfaces, combat capabilities of semi-autonomous vehicles, including drones and AI, and the use and development of biochemical warfare and neuroweapons. So literally then it goes into the DARPA territory. And then it talks about how NATO is basically just continuing in this regard what DARPA had been doing. And then they talk about the culture war, that the central aspect is actually the psychocultural rather than anything geographical. Because now everybody's on the internet, everybody has the devices. NATO's focus will be to capture the psychocultural, they say, which, again, is just part of the mastering of the human domain, which was the Air Force thing that they unveiled back in the PSYOP. If you remember Jade Helm, they announced that whole Mastering the Human Domain program, which is, I guess, just the updated version of Full Spectrum Dominance. And they actually say total cognitive control is the end goal, the end state. So modern war, if you want to understand, well, you talk about MK Ultra. Why does that matter? Because that's this is MK Ultra. This cognitive warfare document is the most recent update to the MK Ultra stuff.
And doesn't also say in the document this type of warfare is never ending. There'll be no peace treaties, or it's constant conflict.
Another thing that they mentioned too that was surprising was the troll, that they knew how to, that they can intentionally create internet trolls, and they love internet trolls because that furthers the division and apathy in the public. And so they talk about how when you're arguing with people on Twitter or Facebook, that's all intentional, and they've studied how to get people into the mode of constantly reacting. So basically, Twitter is just there as a means to do this, to foster this dissension and chaos, which actually aligns with, what a lot of the tech programming Silicon Valley people came out saying 5 or 6 years ago. If you remember that, when they were all saying, oh, sorry, we made Facebook to destroy society, and yes, we knew it would make everybody addicted and alone. Sorry about that, by the way.
Whoops.
Do you remember that when they said
yes.
that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's interesting because something like the lockdown wouldn't have been possible, 30 years ago, because people simply wouldn't have had a substitute for not going out, whereas people were on the internet, or the whole thing with binge watching, or even the apps allow you to order takeout. at home.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great point. In fact, that was a little gem hidden in the lockstep document where they pointed out that the lockdowns would actually lead to the preparation for the automation of society.
Yeah, there was that document. I think Whitney Webb wrote an article about that, how they anticipated this is all part of the AI economy or China. Again,
yes.
China's, so we have to compete with them. We have to become like them, and how we have to do away with legacy systems like individual car ownership, brick and mortar stores, and lo and behold, the lockdown.
Yeah.
You know, advances that agenda.
Yeah. So what's in lockstep, actually, and by the way, I don't know if you heard the when I covered lockstep on InfoWars, but there's actually four scenarios, and all four scenarios have elements of, you know, where we're going. And one of the scenarios was actually about the smart cities and all that stuff. And if you read the rest of the scenarios, it all ironically sounds like, I mean, I don't think Klaus wrote it. It was like some kind of neocon that wrote that document. But when you read it, like, you're thinking, did Klaus write this? I mean, this sounds like what's in Klaus's Fourth Industrial Revolution book, because there were so many. I mean, it even talked about, you know, China being the source of when this virus gets out, and that this leads to global lockdowns. Global lockdowns lead to the implementation of the vaccine passports and the QR codes. But ultimately, none of that really matters, because the purpose was getting everybody used to and basically trained into the new system, which was all automated, all, like you said, getting you used to being at home, working from home, doing everything on Zoom, getting your food, like you said, delivered, your groceries delivered, all of that. Basically, and then, well, just think about Amazon. I mean, Amazon's like,
yes,
you know, the classic example of this.
Well, Jeff Bezos needs it because he has to spend $35 million to spend 5 minutes in space.
No, he's going to take everybody to a utopian Mars colony, which I still think is like, they're going to be it's going to be a hyped up Disney's mission to Mars ride that will be just basically duping people.
Yeah. Why not?
Somebody told me about a trick. I forget who it was. Somebody had pulled a trick on somebody like this. I'm trying to remember what it was, but they were like, oh, have you not seen, I can't remember what it was, but somebody did something like this where they wanted to see if they could fool somebody into thinking that they had taken like some, you know, crazy space flight or low Earth orbit flight, but it was all engineered on like a, you know, like an advanced theme park ride, basically.
Oh yeah, you could do that. I mean, just think about it. I mean, this becomes a problem with deep fakes and technology with special effects, but it does become, you're confronted with an epistemological problem here. Our sense is what we perceive as real, but we already have that with the claims of viruses and their nature and their existence, because we're just relying on these so-called institutions, which have no reason we should trust anyway, that these things actually exist, or at least exist in the way they do. We just, okay, they say that, whatever. But, good example, say you're watching a movie, a Jurassic Park movie, and you see dinosaurs look really real. Mm-hmm. You know it's fake because it's a movie. But what if that was presented on CBS Evening News as saying a dinosaur was discovered in Brazil, and they presented it as a news story, would people believe it? And same thing with an alien attack, right? I mean, there was
had multiple examples of this. That's a good segue, I guess, into the Alternative 3. Have you ever watched that?
Yeah, that real corny thing in the 70s.
Yeah, did you actually
not watch the whole like, bits and pieces of it.
Need to watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you get the idea. And people apparently at the time believed it. And the directors even said they couldn't believe people believed it, that people were that gullible. I mean,
well, it's like War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like the newer version of that. Yeah.
But I mean, you present it, and there's a lot of, you know, evidence is just that they're trying leading people towards this. Then maybe they may not eventually doing it. But the whole alien, you know, UFO phenomenon, which has been, you know, sort of nudged or supported by the state. They're Collins brothers. You interviewed them. Yeah, I interviewed them about that.
In their book. And of course, their book is superior to the Jim Keith book on Alternative Three. But there are some gems in the Jim Keith book, pun intended. But the Jim Keith book, Alternative Three, gets into how they use kind of the space mythos as part of the Alternative Three narrative, because his thesis is that it was a psyop, but that it's also a real plan, which is kind of true, although I don't agree with Jim Keith's conclusions that they intended to have some off-world, thing. That's all baloney. The real Noah's Ark plan is really what we're seeing now, is, whatever type of depopulation thing they'll use, it has nothing to do with going off-world. That's all baloney. But it's interesting to see that now it's the individual so-called self-made zillionaires like Bezos and company who are supposedly now the face of the private space program that's going to take people to their, off-world Elysium. Think of the Matt Damon movie, Elysium, this kind of a thing. That's all baloney. But what is not baloney, I don't think, is the idea of the elite going into underground bases and having that model for, so it's not Moonraker, Hugo Drax. It's, I'm trying to think, what's a good movie of, it's Dr. Strangelove. It's the, elite.
Mineshaft. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
The Mineshaft gap. But again, what it goes back to, from the standpoint of the public, who is Klaus Schwab to write books dictating to the world about what the new economy should be? I mean, what particular insight or authority or legitimacy does someone like Schwab have, or anyone who goes to Davos, just because you have supposedly have billions of Federal Reserve notes into your control, that you now in our position now to dictate to people, when in all the trouble in the world, well, wait a second, you guys have been in control for how many years? For 60, 70 years over the global economy. This is your system you designed. Same thing with Polygon, the whole thing where they foresee a cyber warfare collapse of the system. It's like, well, wait a second, why would you design a system that's so fragile then? I mean, what's the advantage of of this if it can be shut down by the click of a mouse? I mean, it's like, Joe, you're smart. I mean, who are they to even speak this way, that they have any authority on these affairs? And this is the problem, is that there's people no longer, we don't have a sovereign government. We don't have representative government. And this, maybe this goes to the fact that over several decades, they've been able to monopolize financial systems, cartelize everything and buy up everything and pretty much either bribe or blackmail everybody that they're in control of all the cultural and political choke points of civilizations now, the developed world. And we saw that when they were able to shut down 190 economies overnight under a completely bogus claim, under one lousy computer program or algorithm,
Well, this reminds me of the models of the different cons. And if you think about the PCR test and how that can be manipulated and how it doesn't even really tell you anything. I was reminded about the Theranos thing.
If
you remember that. And that was a similar type of scam. And again, once you notice these patterns of scams and con people, it's like, this is obviously a scam. And but people don't question the sources of authority because there's been a long intentional psychological warfare component to education to default to experts. And of course, Quigley talked about that a long time ago, the managerial society, the experts, you just default to them because, where'd you get your medical degree? And almost every person who says that, they don't know anything about medicine. And then, you just retort by saying, well, but wait a minute, the experts don't agree. How do you know which expert to follow?
you have competing experts, we're back to square one.
Yeah.
And also, what does a medical degree represent?
Yeah, indoctrination.
Indoctrination, so this isn't to say they don't have something to offer. There's some benefit to their technical expertise, but this as an individual, as a free individual, sovereign individual with critical thought, you should be able to exercise some free thought and critique what they're claiming. I mean, good example is just because Dr. Fauci is a doctor doesn't mean that he can say one thing one day and contradict himself the next day. And you say, well, I'm not the expert, so I can't see the contradiction now. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know.
If you remember in 1984, though, like Winston is castigated for noticing contradictions.
Yes, that's the thing.
That very thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, you got to say 2 + 2 = 3. You got to believe it, actually.
Yeah, and if you point it out, you're a bad person.
You're a bad person. And that's why you can have, like, Dr. Fauci now one time saying that the vaccine will protect you from getting sick. Nah, it doesn't protect you from getting sick. from getting really sick. Now it doesn't protect you from getting really sick. It even kills you. Now it actually kills you at twice the rate. Now that if you're vaccinated, you're twice as likely to die than you are someone who isn't vaccinated. But you still have to take it. And when it's failing, we need to take a booster shot.
Right.
You know. No. You know.
And well, the whole COVID thing. Catherine Austin Fitz has pointed out when she's looked at plague laws, the whole COVID thing is really a technique and a strategy for greater control. It's that simple.
Yeah, there's always like a change in currencies and stuff like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The plague laws.
And so
when
you understand it from that perspective, now you understand why they employ all the techniques of just lying all the time. And what the constant lying does is really just it has the effect of throwing the audience off balance, so they can never find the truth in this just whirlwind of lies. And they'll keep defaulting to the authority in a kind of Stockholm syndrome gaslighting scenario where they just it's just a vicious circle. Where it's, oh, well, okay, you know, now tell me what I'm supposed to do, right? And for delusional, you know, cowardly, fearful people, that's unfortunately the default. They just fall back into that loop of just whatever. Well, okay, tell me what to believe right now. Okay. And then 5 minutes later it contradicts. Okay. Well, tell me what to believe now. Right.
Yeah.
And they know that in PSYOPs that it works that way. In fact, the silent weapons document says that at the very beginning. It says that we learn from wartime psychological warfare, and plague laws is the same principle, right? They even said that wartime rationing and what happens to countries when they're put under wartime scenarios of controlled rationing is a recurring model for these kinds of scenarios, because you can get more done. Alan Watt used to always say this, that you can get more done in a few months of wartime than you can in 20 years of peacetime in terms of social engineering.
Yeah. And of course, there's no better example of social engineering than wartime.
Exactly.
I mean, there's the idea. Yeah. And this is why you have documents that, you know, although it's claimed to be satire, the report from Iron Mountain, it does at least echo sentiments or ideas in NSC 68 or the Gaither Report, military Keynesianism, and the idea of you have to maintain an atmosphere of emergency or fear to organize the collective energies of the society. Otherwise, it falls apart. Meaning, what they see as falling apart is people being free. You see, because again, it goes back to this, I guess, obsession of control.
Yeah, I heard Al Gore the other day. Did you hear him use the phrase "to be"? He said, "We have to beware of what did he say? Populist authoritarianism." Populist authoritarian. Talk about a made up Orwellian term. But yeah. And I remembered that was actually on the Davos website. Like a couple of years ago at Davos, they had that article up about the rising tide. It was right after Trump. That's what it was. It was the rising tide of populist authoritarianism.
Yeah. So basically people, I guess, expecting your government to represent their interests and have it actually reflected in legislation and policies is populist authoritarianism.
Exactly right. Yeah, anything that actually might help people is that. It's so weird it's not weird, but the inversion, the way they'll take the terms and kind of remember maybe 4 years ago, they started using that term. And it was that professor, I forget her name. She had some kind of weird new agey witchy name, but she had invented this term of red brown shirts, which was people who were supposedly unwitting or witting Russian bots online. So anybody that challenged, you know, the neoliberal narrative, she had put out this report. And then they did, do you remember when they did those models? They even included eventually, not initially, but after the second or third report, they included me amongst, I don't know, 200 people on YouTube. I mean, I wasn't up at the top, but I was in like the 200s or whatever. But it was the conservative to alt-light to alt-right, what they call it, funnel on YouTube. And they were arguing that YouTube had allowed Donald Trump to get elected by all of these people in this domain who was basically anybody libertarian or anybody that wasn't like totally, you know, Marx or something. And they'd put out all these models and papers, these different university professors, and they'd come up with this moniker of the red brown shirts. And so that was anybody who worked with 21st Century Wire, Patrick Henningsen, RT. If you were in any of those, if you knew any of those people, if you'd done an interview with any of these people, you were a quote red brown shirt, which was again just something they had made up. Like there's just some professor made up this, you know, well, now we've got these Russian agents who are not actually right wing, but they're not really left wing, but they're in the alternative media and they're red brown shirts. So I'm just pointing out examples of these sort of made up terms of populist authoritarian, a red brown shirt.
Sounds like a conspiracy theory.
Well, those are the established registered trademark, you know, red. Those are the stamped conspiracy theories, which you can have those.
But, yeah. Well, it's interesting because
Donald Trump as a Russian agent, that's an establishment approved conspiracy theory. Did you see? Let me give another great example. There was they were talking about some of the Proud Boys who were feds.
Yeah.
And it had come out. And the hilarious thing was that they spun it that they were Iranian agents because they happened to be like foreign guys. who were, okay, so because they're Iranian of descent, and they're obvious Fed informants for the, you know, January event. I mean, come on, who actually believes that they're Iranian agents? No, they're Feds. They were entrapment provocateurs, obviously.
So they're trying to suggest that the Iranian government was somehow trying to orchestrate it.
Yahoo said that Iran was trying to influence our elections. I kid you not, for Trump, as if Trump is some sort of friend of Iran.
No, he killed that nuclear deal.
I mean, but it doesn't even have to make sense.
No, it doesn't. It's you know, just like how the protest became an insurrection. And at the same time, they called it an insurrection and the biggest threat to our democracy since the American Civil War. They give a pass or just don't say anything about the Black Lives Matter Antifa protests just a few months before that caused billions of dollars in damage and, you know, resulted in thousands of deaths, you know, a spike in the homicide rate.
Time Magazine admitting that
yes,
the whole election was a fraud.
They didn't. Well, they secured the election.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that conspiracy with, you know, with social media and the establishment media, you know, was okay. You know, mm-hmm. Although again, this goes back to mind control because we're talking about that NATO document. Talking about, you know, psychological warfare, cognitive warfare, is if you have a society that's supposedly is democratic or has a representative form of government, and the people elect the representatives, it's going to require a media establishment, a fourth estate, that's going to provide information where people can make these decisions on who to vote for and what policies to support. But obviously, it's not working out that way, is it? Because now these institutions are all, I mean, the whole networks are all in, you know, the networks are controlled by the corporations that are tied into this National Security State and Intelligence Agencies, and they admit to manipulating public perception.
Yeah, they even say before half of the you know, news programs funded by the Gates Foundation, you know.
Yeah, Pfizer, brought to you by Pfizer, Pfizer. Exactly. So, but the, again, is they admit to manipulating, you know, when you have an election, and this is, of all the problems with the election, whether it's the, you know, the whole COVID regime enabling all the shenanigans that helped elect Joe Biden, you know, with the mail-in ballots, there's no way to maintain any integrity in the electoral process when that's going on. But just to control information and the open manipulation, but the admission by social media, which is how people get most information now, whether it's YouTube shutting down videos or Twitter kicking people off, you know, Instagram, you know, or Facebook, they're tailoring or they're choosing what information to provide to the public. So how is a public as dumbed down as, amused as it is, you know, with brass and circuses, how are they in a position to make any informed decision on these policies? Mm-hmm. How is there any informed consent about our political institutions or our government if they openly admit to manipulating this information mm-hmm. that the public exposure relies upon to make these decisions? And they're, you know, they're obviously not given the information they need, you know. You know, they admit to manipulating information to achieve a certain political outcome. And that's mm-hmm. not a conspiracy, though. You know.
Yeah, exactly. It's a complete double standard, but you know that's I guess.
Well, what do you expect? But then when they create the social media, which does allow initially for a few years allowed for sort of this heterogeneous environment for information. A multi-billion-dollar media corporation could not compete with one YouTuber providing important information from his basement.
Yeah, right.
I mean that's when they shut down your, you know, my channel was shut down, you know, along with millions of others. What are they're admitting? And this is the problem. What do you think is spent on media globally? Trillions annually? Trillions maybe?
Probably. I don't know.
Okay, but and what do you think the alternative, the general alternative media is? Maybe it's probably capitalized, maybe in the millions, mm-hmm. and they had to shut it down. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one thing that shows is that it takes, you know, a gigantic Herculean mm-hmm. effort, you know, to shut all this down and control all this.
Talk about asymmetrical warfare, asymmetrical informational warfare. so maybe that's the you know that's the can we say the white pill in all this is lies are a lot more expensive to maintain than the truth, you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You know, and that's what you get with all this obsession with cognitive warfare is, boy, they really fear the common man left to his own devices, right? I mean, they just really can't let him go. They got to constantly needle him, poke him, prod him, poison him.
I think they think that's part of the rationale for the depopulation, too, is, you know, they're always talking like if we don't kill everybody, then humans are going to be wiped out, which is bizarre logic. But yeah.
And this is why they want to create this sense of dread, you know, false scarcity. That's what the Club of Rome is about.
Exactly.
You know, the
engineered scarcity. Yeah.
Yeah. And we see that now, you know, you talk about with the Biden administration, this talk of inflation, the supply chain collapse and. You know, this, and a lot of times it's you get the idea that these people don't know what they're doing. Says, no, this isn't a flaw in the system; it's a feature of the system. In fact, what Biden is doing, what Trump was doing, when they shut everything down, they printed up trillions of dollars to pay people not to work or to bail mm-hmm. Wall Street out. Is they're creating this very scenario is going to play out this way. This gets us towards what Klaus Schwab talks about. With the new economy and the collapse of the currency and the imposition of central bank, you know, digital issued currencies, which is basically, it's not so much a currency, it's a control system, because this ties into the implementation of the COVID passport system, because all these control systems that you see like being imposed, the lockdowns like in Austria that's being contemplated in Germany, is they're really not enforceable unless people voluntarily comply. But if you install or implement like a COVID passport system with smartphone technology along with a digital currency, you can control where people go and what they buy because the currency itself is programmable. That's the big distinction here.
Yeah, and the Pfizer or CDC guy that was saying that he thought it'd be a great idea to, did you hear that clip where he was saying something like, you know, it was like from 2 or 3 years ago and he was talking about working with Fauci and he's like, and then we came up with the idea that why don't we just destroy the existing system?
Oh yeah. That was that all the people at CDC were talking about that.
Yeah.
How they were talking about, they were talking about bio research and something they're not doing about by gain of function. That's and it, he said the only way they can impose a vaccine regime, mandated regime, is they got to pretty much break all the rules and blow up the system.
That's it. And then I was thinking, well, if you think about it, like people are always like, Biden's so dumb and that administration, they're a bunch of idiots. Well, but he doesn't run anything. And the people that are running things do. It actually does make sense if their goal is to shut the country down,
yes,
to dismantle it. Then it actually all makes sense. And if you were Klaus and these people, that's what you would do. You would enact every policy that damages and dismantles the existing system, because that just furthers your point of showing that, well, we all is unsustainable. The system is unsustainable, right? Well, they're making it unsustainable because they're destroying it, right?
Yeah, it's how else to build. You got to destroy it to build back better.
Exactly.
And then that phrase is picked up, you know, just spontaneously by every two-bit politician.
When I try to explain this to people who do kind of catch on, especially the boomers that have caught on to, well, Fauci's a liar and this is crazy and this is going bad. And then you try to explain to them, okay, but you understand that a lot of this is intentional, and they just can't grasp that. They're like, no, what? Nuh-uh. And I was listening to, who was it? It wasn't but there was a general or somebody I was reading or heard him lecturing, and they were talking about intent, like a strategy in warfare where you intentionally screw things up. And it's very counterintuitive, but you do it because it paves the way to set up something completely new. I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And that's why you have the riots in the cities, and you know, these are ways to orchestrate real estate acquisition, because you can collapse the price of these assets.
Yeah.
And, last summer people were like, why are they letting this happen? And you can say, well, it's because they're stupid liberal politicians, and the governor, is a liberal weenie. And all this, but no. I mean, they want the mayhem, they want the anarchy. And this is why something like, you have the Kyle Rittenhouse case, you know, where you have this kid who goes out there to, you know, naively think that if he goes out to defend property, he's going to have support of the system. All of a sudden, the system comes after him, mm-hmm. because that's the one thing they don't want. They don't want people out there actually defending property. You know, it's kind of funny. They say, well, no, we'll provide the police service, you pay the taxes, and we'll protect the property. Then they withdraw the police, and then when people stand up to fill the void, you know, they perform, you know, sort of ad hoc militia groups, whatever, to go out to defend property. Then they condemn the vigilantism of it all. Like, what?
No, exactly. Once you frame this and situate it in terms of warfare, it all makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Everything that they're doing is different forms of warfare to dismantle the existing system and to bring in a new one.
Yeah, that's why you have like George Soros. Yeah. I mean, you can look at his Open Society Foundation and this whole campaign to fund down ballot candidates to install these district attorneys around the country, mm-hmm. mayors and police chiefs that are dedicated to mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
And maintaining law and order and protecting property, but destroying property. And that's why, you know, last summer of 2020, you're like, well, this doesn't make any sense. But it does make sense, again, if you're dedicated to, crashing existing systems. And when they talk about build back better and these things, well, wait a second, I see a pattern here, a strategy, you know.
Yeah, isn't there an analogy of this too with the way like the defense companies work when the people argue in terms of the warfare, like they actually want there to be the regional conflict so that they can build up the region. They can put the infrastructure in, and then they can bomb it,
yeah,
intentionally having the war so that they can rebuild it. I mean, that's their business model, right?
Yeah, Bechtel or, you know, General Dynamics or something. They've got the contracts to rebuild what was destroyed, you know, or acquire the assets like, what's her name? Madeleine Albright, who went in, I think, yeah, she positioned herself to make money off taking over the communication systems in Yugoslavia.
Right. And the rare earth minerals and stuff too.
Yeah. And so, yeah, a lot of it's disaster capitalism profiteering.
Yeah, there you go. That's what word I was looking for. Yeah.
You know, and that's what's funny is who, what's her name, who wrote Disaster Capitalism?
Is it Naomi Wolf? No, or, no, she did Shock Doctrine.
No, Naomi Klein.
Naomi Klein, that's what I meant.
She did Shock Doctrine, but she doesn't recognize, from what I understand, she doesn't recognize the COVID scam as Shock Doctrine.
Yeah, like the greatest example of her theory comes along and she doesn't see it. Yeah.
So it goes, yeah, you can, I guess you can criticize it to a certain extent, but if you really, if what your criticism, like if she's criticizing Bush and Cheney with the Shock Doctrine, then it's acceptable. But then it doesn't apply to like Barack Obama. But really, the powers behind it, you know, control both parties.
Well, yeah, I mean, same with, yeah, gatekeeper Noam Chomsky, who did the exact same thing.
Yeah, yeah, and the sure. Other day. Yeah, that's right. He's the COVID thing, and he doesn't question 9/11 or Kennedy or something. It's just a waste of time to get dabbing into the Kennedy assassination or 9/11.
Well, I thought he was a liberal though, but he's fine with total control and fascism for anybody that doesn't get stabbies.
So. Yeah, now he's in for like injection fascism.
Yeah, excommunicating, exiling these people outside of civilization. So. That's very liberal, right?
Yeah, and there was it that who was that? That's that. Oh, what's his name from New York University? Forget his name. He got in trouble because he was speaking up against COVID, and then he found out that Larry Fink was on the board of his university. The head of BlackRock, which has made tons of money.
Oh, wow.
Off the whole thing. And well, there you go. It's like, this is why you don't want, you know, to the extent that there are, you know, people in academia who can voice a meaningful opinion on these things, they'll have to be shut down, you know, and the universities won't be able to, you know, that's why you're not getting any criticism on things out of the universities, you know, they're just full on board with it all.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the way universities work is that the donors control all that. Mm-hmm. So.
Then all the funding, this is one thing I noticed that this was happening, how the momentum, when this whole thing went down last year, is there's a lot of money went into like investment into redesigning office spaces and buildings to be compliant. And once you get all that funding going in that direction, how do you get people to go away from it when you control the money system, the world central banks, and you can control the flow of trillions of dollars, you more or less bribe people to go along with the agenda because they'll be paid to do it and they won't even think critically about it at all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, most of the politicians are just simply bought off. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the whole Cold War, the whole, which you talk about all these, the whole like 60, 70 years of the Cold War and everything is you can, again, with all that funding, with all the, not just the research and development weapon systems, but the production of movies, media, and all that. And, mm-hmm, and this goes back to the whole idea of creating a pageant that no one can, you know, basically no one can really question because they're not going to give a platform to do it. So it's the, again, we're given the illusion of a free society when it's all being controlled and that, you know, so. I don't, yeah, want to blackpill people about it, but again, it says a lot that they. You said all the. There's a meme or a saying that says all the propaganda wouldn't be necessary if things were so hopeless. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
So is that so? Anything else? Do you think we covered it? I mean, I think we're close to.
No, that's a pretty good overview of these documents.
Yeah.
And how apocalyptic narratives are perfect for psychological warfare manipulation.
Yeah. That's why there's so many, not only because it's an entertaining topic, end of civilization always makes for a good movie. A zombie apocalypse always gets people to watch, but it's same with all the contagion movies and you know, that we saw going into this thing the past 20 years, prep people to accept to become fearful of the whole COVID things. That a lot of people tell me is it's like we're in a movie. He says, "Well, you are in a movie. That's why
you are exactly."
So, okay,
like,
Jay.
Like Event 201 and all that. That's like, you know, theater practice or.
Well, didn't social distancing? Didn't that term that was used?
Yeah,
in the
I was
movie Contagion.
Say, Contagion has the social distancing in it. Exactly.
And Sanjay Gupta was in it, right?
Yeah, he was. Exactly.
So okay. Okay, Jay, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Tim.
That's Jay from Jay's Analysis. Jay's Analysis catches you can go there, support his work for $4.95 a month.
Yep. And also we have an official sponsor now, which is a great company out of Austin. They're good patriot red pill guys, chalk.com, chok.com. Okay. And they do basically male supplements, so not just sexually related supplements, but health related supplements, including testosterone boosting supplements or mental clarity supplements or energy based supplements. So really good stuff, really good guys. So you get a 60% discount if you use the promo code J60 at chalk.com.
And there's a war on testosterone.
Exactly. That's their point, is to fight big soy. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's the big
They're
thing.
A toxically masculine company. I'll put it that way.
So you're being poisoned, I guess, actually literal toxins, also cultural toxins to destroy masculinity, because you take the men out, then you can do what you want with the women.
Exactly.
So, okay, great. So
and then you can turn all the women into men, apparently.
What's what they're doing. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's how, because you just want to. Well, you want to do away with that distinction and get back to the original, I guess, the androgynous. You know,
the
form.
Androgynous amoeba that first sprung from the primordial soup, right?
Yeah. It gets go back to that. That's right. So the Gnostic, the original Gnostic angel, the androgynous.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
the original Baphomet, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So okay, Jay, thanks a lot. Listen. Have a great Thanksgiving, and if I don't talk to you, have a Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Bye. You've got a lot of nerve to say you are my friend when I was down. You just stood there grinning. You've got a lot of nerve to say you've got a helping hand to lend. You just want to be on the side that's winning. Like that, you're so hurt. Why then don't you show it? You say you've lost your faith, that's not where it's at. You have no faith to lose, and you know. You
satisfied with your position and your fate. Don't you understand? It's not my problem. I wish that for just one time you could stand inside my shoes. And just for just one time, you could stand inside my